There is no sin for a king who kills for the right cause, who is engaged in maintaining his citizens, but this injunction is not applicable to me. Prabhupada's purport. Maharaj Yudhisthira thought that although he was not actually involved in the administration of the kingdom, which was being carried on well by Duryodhana without harm to the citizens, he caused the killing of so many living beings only for his personal gain of the kingdom from the hands of Duryodhana. The killing was committed not in the course of administration, but for the sake of self-aggrandizement. And as such, he thought himself responsible for all the sins. Okay. And if we go ahead and look, this, of course, is a part of the eighth chapter is kind of finished now, Kunti's prayers, and Krishna's going to leave, but it says here, 1845, thus accepting the prayers of Srimati Kunti Devi, the Lord subsequently informed other ladies of his departure by entering the palace of Hastinapur. Mm-hmm. But upon preparing to leave, he was stopped by King Yudhisthira, who implored him lovingly. King Yudhisthira, who was much aggrieved, could not be convinced, despite instructions by great sages headed by Vyasa and the Lord Krishna himself, the performer of superhuman feats, and despite all historical evidence. King Yudhisthira, son of Dharma, overwhelmed by the death of his friends, was aggrieved just like a common materialistic man. O sages, thus deluded by affection, he began to speak. King Yudhisthira said, "Oh, my lot, I am the most sinful man. Just see my heart, which is full of ignorance. This body, which is ultimately meant for others, has killed many, many phalanxes of men. I have killed many boys, brahmanas, well-wishers, friends, parents, preceptors, and brothers. Though I live millions of years, I will not be relieved from the hell that awaits me for all these sins." There is no sin for a king who kills for the right cause, who is engaged in maintaining his citizens, but this injunction is not applicable to me. I have killed many friends of women. I have thus caused enmity to such an extent that it is not possible to undo it by material welfare work, as it is not possible to filter muddy water through mud, or purify a wine-stained pot with wine. It is not possible to counteract the killing of men by sacrificing animals. Go back up here, maybe. So this is a narrative, no? We just have a whole narrative here of what's happening. And of course, it's so easy for us to understand the concepts, the principles, you know, to purify our intelligence, the proper intelligence, proper logic, by accepting these things in terms of a story. The body gets involved in terms of imagining different sensuous experiences. The sun, where is Yudhisthira saying this? Is he saying it in the palace, or is he saying it outside in the garden, or, you know? And so the different concepts get, you know, hung on different sensuous experiences, and a string of sensuous experiences. You know? But of course, as we advance, you know, through the intellectual platform, we go back again to the story, and then the story becomes primary, and the logic, in that sense, you know, of the ideas, like putting them in geometric proportions and connections, you know, these connections become secondary. You know, so the story becomes prominent again. So bhakti yoga is the very best from the beginning, and the middle, and the end. You know, but we should come to the point where we do, you know, pass just beyond hearing the story to the point of actually understanding what the message is. We're in Mexico. We came on Wednesday? Yeah. And we're getting ready for the big educational meetings that will be going on in Texas. It's developed into a very nice program. Mother Ermola is going to come. And then Ram Giridhari and Panadas from Goloka Education from Bombay. And we'll be able to be there. And so we'll be hopefully involving a lot of other people. And the focus is setting up a primary school in Houston, but with the idea that it can be modeled any place else, you know, in the United States, like that. And in the sense of like a Waldorf school or a Montessori school, so it'll be like, you know, economically and administratively independent of the temple, but totally involved in the temple community, and be profitable, you know, not big profit, but enough so you have a little money to retire when you retire. So it's a very, very good model, and it seems like it could be a great step forward for Prabhupada's program. And of course, what is the content of all that? It's Srimad Bhagavatam. That's the whole thing we have to remember. You know? But how many people are ready just for to be relishing the pure mellow of the Srimad Bhagavatam? And how many people, on the other hand, are still relishing the mellows of sense gratification, you know, subtle or gross? Subtle sense gratification. The deities are very pretty. The people can dress in nice clothes and have nice social position in our society and relate to each other and glorify each other in terms of their position. And we appreciate that the deities are spiritual, but we don't want them to become too close, because then we couldn't go on with our enjoying them. Enjoying prasadam, enjoying the deities, enjoying our society, like that. So subtle contamination comes in, like that, and it's more, in some ways, more entangling, because it's subtle. In some ways, we think that it's devotional service. You know? Of course, the example is given that we plant the seed, and the creeper grows, but along with it, other weeds also grow, which look like devotional service. And so we're not so careful to take them out when they're little. And then the roots get very deep, and sometimes the roots get tangled up with the real creeper, and it's very difficult to take them out without tearing our whole creeper down later on. Mm-hmm. So Srimad Bhagavatam is our very means of conquest, and we should go on studying it and advancing, you know, to more advanced cantos and taking the more advanced medicine. We're discovering this. The same things are being discussed in the first canto, second canto, third canto, you know, but they're being discussed with more detail, more problems. Okay, I learned to walk. Okay, then I learned to use a bicycle. Then I learned to, you know, take a motorcycle. Then I get a car. Then I get a truck. You know, and so I'm always accomplishing the same purpose, taking the same route, but I'm doing it with more profundity. And so the other cantos are going to discuss the same things, but with more depth, you know, to more purification. You know? So in some ways we're thinking, my goodness, this is just like, you know, this is like, instead of Yudhisthira, it could have been Arjuna. And Arjuna was lamenting for almost the same reasons, you know, in the beginning. There's a whole thing of going through a detailed analysis, but it looks like, you know, Arjuna's lamentation was for the same thing. He had separation from his family members. They may have been rascals, but still they were his family members. And then other thing is that if he does this, then there's going to be so much sinful reaction. He won't be able to enjoy life, you know. And on the other hand, we have other side of the thing. Everything Arjuna predicted actually happened, you know. And so now Yudhisthira is lamenting because he's killed so many friends and, you know, protectors of women, brahmanas, you know, so many people, you know. And so he was thinking, this is all, I did this all for sense gratification, you know, for Maya, for my prestige. But it seems a little different than Arjuna, because it seems that Arjuna was also thinking about kind of like enjoying, you know, with his family. And here Yudhisthira is simply thinking about, the only comment is pretty much just that, he's not talking so much about how other people feel. You know, he's not like thinking that this is bad because of what other people are thinking and how they're suffering, but it's more like, again, just like how I'm going to suffer because they're suffering, and it's all a fact. You know, Kunti was saying that in her prayers. Now you're going to leave us, and probably comments that you know, so many sons and nephews and of all the people dead have a very vengeful attitude towards the Pandavas. And so that Krishna is leaving, you know, they also need his association just for this perspective like that. Yeah. So it's very, very, what, interesting situation. And we see so many times this, again and again, you know, people just go without thinking. You know, get a cigarette, smoke, you know, then look for a cup of coffee, and then start, you know, carrying some romantic relationship on in the office or, yeah, you know, like that. So either they do it, you know, from one thing to another. Now it's time to sleep, you know, sleep, get up, you know, take a bath, feel good. So they just carry from one activity to another with a little bit of organization, a little bit of priority, which makes it a little bit civilized, makes it a little passionate, you know. But basically, it's fruitive activities described in flowery language, either directly experiencing it, or as human beings, we always have puppet shows or stories or songs or movies, and we always enjoy it in a subtle fashion, you know, to also, besides actually trying to enjoy it, you know, the subtle stories, of course, orient us how to try and live our lives in the gross fashion, you know. And so this is so many people, you know, anamaya, pranamaya, manomaya. They're living on this level of pranamaya and anamaya, manamaya, and most people don't even get beyond that. Manushyanam sahasreshu. But some people, they're appreciating, you know, being alive, having the higher activity of their life. So then they come to this higher manomaya level of what, of honor, duty, you know, these kind of responsibilities. Panchopashana, you worship Ganesh, you worship, I guess, Brahma, Durga. But Prabhupada explains that when the concept of the worshipable deity is the mass of humanity, when we have the idea that the mass of humanity is the worshipable object, then the deity we're worshipping is Ganesh, Ganapati. Gana means people, and Pati means like protector, master, Ishwara, Ganesh, controller. So you see so much of the propaganda of the literature. Some hero will fight bravely. Why? To protect the citizens, to protect the people. You know, like that's so common. I see so much media like that. That's the real justification. You know? And of course, you know, it can expand from my community to all of humanity, and then it can expand to all living beings. But Prabhupada says in, you know, second canto, first chapter, that this idea of pantheism, Viratrup, unless it has a service attitude, it won't be very useful. So there are many people who now are promoting demons, who are promoting natural, you know, natural products, organic food, because they want to exploit the stuff. You know? And this kind of brings us very much to a central point then here. Because it says that the administration was being carried on well by Duryodhana without harm to the citizens. And this is a very subtle point which we have to deal with a lot in terms of our preaching and everything else, you know. And people say, well, why are you always being so preachy? Why are you always trying to push us to worship God, follow some ritual, you know, do austerities? You know, everything's going on okay. You know, people are living decent, civilized life. It's religious people like you who cause all the problems, you know, and create all these wars. And if you just think about decent, civilized life and taking care of our family, you know, then there's no need to think about anything else. So Duryodhana, Prabhupada says it, which was being carried on well by Duryodhana without harm to the citizens. You know. But that's the point. Otherwise, Krishna, why would Krishna have been concerned about this? You know, even in the Peter Brook, Mahabharata, Krishna is suggesting that Yudhisthira should claim his birthright. He should claim the kingdom, because that's actually his birthright. And he says, but how can you? So Yudhisthira tells Krishna, he says, but how can you tell me to do this? Because if I do this, then Duryodhana and my uncle will all become frightened of me or envious, and they'll take us into a civil war. So I know this is my birthright and everything else for so many years, you know. I've just been avoiding bringing the topic up because I know it's going to plunge us into a ghastly civil war. And how can you, if I condemn the earth to a horrible death? You know? So this argument is going on again and again through this whole thing. And Krishna is criticized as being a warmonger. You know, Hitler adopted the swastika, and many cases, because they were looking at the Mahabharata. Maybe Hitler was somebody in the Mahabharata. Maybe these guys were there, reliving it again. You know? And they appreciated Arjuna, some of them, because he was the ideal warrior. He could kill his family like that on the basis of some principle or something like that. You know? So this idea is there that the swastika and Hitler and Nazi movement calling themselves Aryan was bringing out this fundamental flaw that exists in Indian philosophy, in the Bhagavad Gita, that other people like Mahatma Gandhi and others who are preaching nonviolence, they're better. You know, Buddha. You know, Buddha was preaching nonviolence, no weapons, and this is much higher philosophy, you know. And so Krishna is just in the philosophy of Krishna consciousness is provoking violence. Of course, in Russia, that was the criticism they were trying to make about Bhagavad Gita, some people too, that it promotes violence. You know? And so it looks like that. You know, everything is going on. People were there was no disease, practically speaking, plagues, and there was sufficient production from the earth. And people were engaged in doing religious duties like that under Duryodhana's reign. And Duryodhana was quite happy about this. He wanted to do this. He wanted to think of himself as a very religious king. And whenever the poor people would come to them, he would extend his hand to them. Whenever the poor and needy came to him, he never denied them. You know? But the fundamental principle was wrong. That's it, right? We all know this. The fundamental principle is wrong. It's still, he wanted to enjoy subtle pleasures, Ishwaraham, aham bogi, yagnitapasham, sarvaloka maheshwaram, all the different sacrifices, were meant for his glorification. He was the enjoyer of prestige, honor, fame, like that, And so the student doesn't learn, what the teacher teaches. The student learns, to be like the teacher. And so if Duryodhana is teaching people by his example and everything else, that the purpose of life is to live a religious life and to get prestige, fame, opulence, position, and be respected by others, then that contamination will be there. Practically speaking, what would happen if the Pandavas all died in the forest? Do you think Duryodhana would have been happy? If all the Pandavas just somehow or other died and disappeared? Probably not, because then he wouldn't have had this sadistic pleasure, of satisfying himself as being better than they were. Okay, some glorification from the citizens, and the element of sadism has to be there, that you're poor and you come to me, but I'm going to make you feel that you're poor, and that you need me, like that, So that's the basic principle, that in the beginning it may start off as a kind of a simple, harmless, glorification of ourself, but there's no gratification, there's no satisfaction in that. If somebody just says, oh, Mr. Smith, you're a nice man. Oh, yes, I am. But there's no satisfaction. And so therefore we want him to do something for us, to actually buy us a gift, and still no satisfaction. So then actually then he should actually suffer some physical austerity, some torment, for glorify us. So in that way there's no satisfaction. It keeps on expanding more and more. So Duryodhana was planting the seed, establishing a very, very firm basis, by which all of the citizens would go to hell. Like that. So he was carrying on the administration well without harm to the citizens, but actually he was doing the greatest harm. By convincing them that you can become happy without God, in a sense, without service to God, without sacrifice to God. So that's the reason then that Krishna wanted all this, and Krishna was manipulating so many things to produce this. But Prabhupada says that a good man, he always stops to think about whether he's right or wrong. You know, so many times, even in our own lives or in ISKCON, we see so many people in a position of power, and they can't listen to anybody else. They're just convinced that they are correct. You know, there's a very famous in our culture, the story of Custer, General Custer. He was the most photographed general during the Civil War, and you know, he was in charge. What is it, 7th Cavalry or something? And so they were out there with Sitting Bull and Crazy Horse, and Crazy Horse, we would just go into battle stark naked, with nothing but a stone behind his ear. I think maybe he had a Shalagram Shila or something behind his ear, you know, like that. So he was a real, you know, heavy Kshatriya guy, and Sitting Bull was like a big, like, you know, kind of like Brahmin guy. So they got all the tribes together at Little Bighorn River. The bend, and we're kind of discussing what's going to happen, everything else. So then Custer came there with the cavalry. He was going to attack them and drive them all away, and you know, kill a lot of people on the way, like that, and establish again his prestige, his honor, get another photograph. His guides, Indian guides, told him, "Hey, there's so many Indians there, you haven't got enough bullets to kill them," you know. But he wouldn't listen to anybody, you know, his own guys. So he told Reno, his second in command, he divided that basically. I mean, I think he had like maybe 400 cavalry with him, 300 with Reno. So he was attacking from the front, and the Indians thought, "My God, who's this madman attacking us?" You know, so they got on their horses going out, and 1,000 to 1 or something. So Reno was in the front. He suddenly realized these guys outnumber us far too much. He looked back to see if Custer was behind him, and Custer wasn't there. You know, what's going on? So he was smart enough to run off to one little hill and stay there and just, you know, defend himself with his men until the next day the infantry came. But Custer was thinking, "Oh, these guys are just going to run away. So I'll go behind them and catch them when they come out and slaughter them." You know? But Crazy Horse had also figured out what Custer was figuring out, so he went behind him, and Custer got back there. Suddenly all the bushes jumped up and they attacked Custer. He got the same idea. "Let me run to the top of the hill, hold out, and I can say I got here at first, at least." So he got to the top of the hill, and just before he got there, all the Indians in the world came over the hill on their horses, like 4 to 1 or something. And they didn't even use weapons. They just drove them into the ground. And they didn't take any prisoners, even though they were accepting it, and they killed Custer. And then, this is my whole point here, they broke an arrow in half and jammed it into his ears on both sides, broke his eardrums, so that in the future he might be able to hear other people's opinions and other people's tears and stuff like that, you know. So this is the point, is that, you know, we can't hear. You know, we become so arrogant. We just accept our opinion as being the greatest, as being perfect. But Prabhupada said that wasn't wrong for Arjuna right to the very end. It wasn't wrong for him to consider that maybe I'm wrong. And right here, it's not wrong for you just to think that maybe I made a mistake. You know, Prabhupada said this is a symptom of a good person. So if we have these doubts and stuff, it's good. It's necessary. You know, other people are full of determination and everything else. Okay, at a certain point, a Kshatriya should have, you know, so much determination. But it seems that even then, in the back of his mind, there should always be, you know, a little bit of sanity, where he can always kind of pull himself in, or else he can listen to somebody else telling him it's time to stop. You know, Brahmana pulls himself in. Kshatriya is always ready to listen to, you know, his father, Dhruva Maharaj, and Kuber, you know, to stop. It's too much now. Slow down. You know, that's a symptom of a good Kshatriya. He may not stop himself, but he knows, you know, I'm part of a society, and so I expect the queen or someone to tell me when I'm getting out of line here, and it's their job. I can't do this job by myself. So it's a situation that's very, you know, very heart-touching. You know, it says that later on, even after everything was finished, and Yudhishthira got instructions from Bhishmadeva, which put him in the right perspective, even still he couldn't really enjoy, you know, what had happened like that. He more or less was engaged in the administration as a form of duty. But he wasn't thinking ever, "Oh boy, I got rid of those rascals, and now I can enjoy myself." You know? Yeah. Always had, fortunately, a sense of detachment from of material satisfaction. So this is kind of our you know, comprehension of the verse here. It's a very natural part. Basically, it's the all it is like an introduction to the next chapter, and what's going to be the basis for making these decisions. And then Bhishma Dev, of course, will be the person who does it by Krishna's desire and everything else. And he'll give, again, the very proper basis for making our decisions and acting. And something which is profound. You know, we can do so many things. Even myself, I give a class, and people say, oh, nice class. Yeah, superficially, I had to do it. I did something like this and that. But really, I didn't have the time to, you know, for contemplation, for perspective, to try and put everything in within a broader intelligence. Prabhupada says in light of the Bhagavad, there are two kinds of people, the introspective and the extravagant. And he says the extravagant, even though they're focused on the external world, they don't see it in the proper proportion. They don't even really understand what is the material world, you know, and they haven't got their activities within proportion like that. Somebody can have sexual relations, you know, but they don't see this in the perspective of having children. That's why the word homosexuality, to me, it's like, it's an oxymoron. There is no homosexuality. It's not sexuality. Sex means reproduction. You know? So you can't have homosexuality, you know, like that. You know? So the same way, without this broader perspective, then it's not satisfying, and we'll look for satisfaction in, you know, something else, you know, tobacco or something. After we engage in this or that, we'll have to have a smoke. After eating, after having sex, after, you know, music, we're not satisfied, so we want to smoke. Because our senses are not satisfied. Itagor Sundar, our head of NEOS, our psychiatrist there, he says that tobacco, nicotine, it stimulates the thinking functions. Not the intelligence necessarily, but it makes the mind active, and it paralyzes or anesthetizes the senses. So your senses are giving you trouble because they're not engaged properly, and therefore you take tobacco, it deadens them, and then your mind becomes active, and now you can start thinking all about all this kind of stuff, you know, speculating, drinking, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So I think it's our you know, point here that everything was going on, practically speaking, relatively well. Oop. There it is. Naino Rajana Praja Bartur Dharma Yude Badori Sam Iti Mena Tu Bhodaya Kalpate Shashanam Vachaha. Everything was going on pretty well, but the problem was that, you know, if a little change here. Oh my God, okay. I think Krishna, that everybody who had heart was weak handed. Whoop. This is our website here if you want to get in contact with us more there. I made a mistake. Okay. So, anybody else have any complaints? Anything else? Oh,
Prabhu, I have unmuted everybody.
I see Madhu Manjari Devi Dasi's here amongst us. She's the pujari in Australia there. I think yesterday was her birthday. Happy birthday, Madhu Manjari. One more year of serving Krishna.
So, I guess in Maharaj, it's Balabhadra.
Haribo, Balabhadra.
Dandavas, close to Prabhupada. Maharaj, considering the fact that Yudhisthira Maharaj is offering this grievance to Krishna at a time when Krishna is leaving Dwarka, or leaving Hastinapur with the intent of returning to Dwarka, considering the time factor that the war had already ended, did Yudhisthira feel this grievance during his coronation, or did the coronation not happen yet? And this seems like a long time for him to be carrying this grief.
The timeline is interesting because that's part of it, you know, because, you know, when, you know, how the emotions come, what causes something else. It says he was ready to go, but he'd also gone back into the palace, you know, and Yudhisthira lovingly implored him to stay, like that, or at least the subject of presenting his lamentation. So it seems that it's right after, you know, the battle, and I would say the coronation had occurred. It looks like, you know, and Krishna would stay for that, but the disappearance of Bhishma hadn't happened. The birth of Maharaj Parikshit hadn't happened, and the how's it go now? I think the way we were looking at it is that the birth of Maharaj Parikshit, maybe Krishna stays for that, and then he comes back for the horse sacrifices that are performed afterwards. So the exact timing, as we go through it again and again, it becomes a little bit more clear and read the Mahabharata. But the lamentation, everything went on for a long time. Again, Nithai Gaur Sundar, he's, you know, in Tennessee, we're there, and he's a psychiatrist. And right near there is the Battle of Murfreesboro. You know, it's just like 10 minutes from his house by automobile. It's the national, you know, cemetery, and it's just, you go there, it's just mind-boggling. It was something like, I think it was like 20,000 people died within like 3 days. And that's a lot of bodies, you know. And they buried them all somehow or other, you know. And so he was, you know, people comment that many in these environments where these big mass graveyards are and stuff like that, that many people are possessed. Either they have nightmares, or actually they even become like, you know, if they're weak-minded or they have different problems, they actually become possessed, you know, by these ghosts. And so this is a national battleground. I guess the war was like 18. Maybe let's say 1890 or something. So as much as 1990, there was so many people in the mental hospital there, which if you look at it as ghosts, were all being still harassed by the people that had died in this battle. You know, someone shams a bayonet in your stomach, you know, like that, you know. And so it's such a trauma that even after 100 years in this subtle ghostly atmosphere, you just can't let it go, you know? But it seems that now that the kirtan's been going on there within the last even like 5 years, all these guys have gotten straightened out like that. So this lamentation and everything else in the Mahabharata, it goes on quite some time, and then finally Vyasadeva shows everybody, takes them down by the river and shows them how everybody has all ended up in a nice place, and everything really did, you know, was for the best. And then people feel a lot of relief seeing how everybody did go to a better place, you know. But at least right now, no, there's just the trauma is still, you know, probably even the smell is still there, you know, and in Kurukshetra at this point from all the dead bodies and stuff like that.
Also, Maharaj, we heard in the earlier class about how Prabhupada had said, and I've read it, that because Krishna was personally present on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, then everyone who died on that battlefield went back to Godhead. But sometimes we hear that not necessarily everyone went back to Godhead. They just went to a better place themselves. What's the proper understanding there?
No, what I remember reading, Prabhupada was saying that for the ordinary soldiers, you know, they were just looking at Krishna and Arjuna. They were thinking, yeah, that's how to do it. That's how to be a soldier, how to be a Kshatriya. And I've got to act that same way. So they were really just, you know, what's the word, enthralled, absorbed in seeing Arjuna and Krishna and other great heroes like that, you know. So they died with Swarup, you know, Swarup city. They were thinking of the form of Parthasarathi. Like that, and so they all went to the, you know, got spiritual forms. But what that citation probably says of that, all the ordinary soldiers, because he said they weren't involved in all the palace intrigue and all the politics and that kind of stuff. Their relationship wasn't complicated by those things. But other people, you know, like Duryodhana, as far as I understand, you know, he got like Duryodhana and all of his brothers were Rakshasas who took birth, you know, for this purpose. And then Kalanemi was Kamsa, and Viparchiti was Jarasandha. So they all took birth on the earth for this purpose of fighting with the demigods. And so they created more karma, more reactions, everything else, and enjoying and suffering those. But, you know, again, it may very well be that they became Rakshasas again. They came back up out of the, even one point during the Mahabharata, the other Rakshasas and everybody else, they pulled Duryodhana up out of the situation. They complain that he's not taking care of it properly. And he tells them, well, if you think it's so easy, you try it, you know. And they grumble and push him back down again, you know, to the level of, you know, of mundane consciousness. So that the other people then, I think they got different destinations, some reactions for their simple activities, and some going back to the celestial level with certain experiences intact and stuff like that. So that's what I would understand.
Here's the exact quote from Prabhupada, and actually it's coming right up, the passing away of Bhishma in the presence of Lord Krishna. In the purport, Prabhupada says, all the soldiers and persons, not just the soldiers, but all the soldiers and persons on the battlefield of Kurukshetra attained their original spiritual form, like the Lord, after their death, because by the causeless mercy of Lord Krishna, they were able to see him face to face on that occasion.
Jai, Swarup Siddhi Ki Jai.
So that's pretty authoritative. I'd be interested to hear, you know, what else Prabhupada may have said, but that's, you know, pretty clear to me.
Yeah, but for example, some of the administrative people, you know, may have gone here and there too. You know. Anyway, other citations, you know, but because he said, for example, it's all this. Anyway, that's as I remember, he was talking. He talks about saying that other people, because they had a more complicated relationship with Krishna, then they got more complicated result, you know, so on. But yeah, but whatever it is, you know. Anyway, you know, they all went up.
Yeah.
Thank you, Manas.
Anybody else?
We're ready. Looks like we're ready to start the chapter on Bhishma Dev now.
Actually, just like I was saying, we're going
to... Oh, yeah,
to,
you're going to jump ahead. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, we're just going to finish off these last two verses and then go to the second canto.
Yeah. As we go on, again, I mentioned, like Jayananda told us, that Prabhupada said, you go on chanting Hare Krishna, you'll see pastimes that you never read in any of my books. So you go on and you're reading these stories, these prayers, and you start noticing little subtle things, like, you know, like we're discussing now, you know, about where everybody went and stuff like that, and you start to enter into the consciousness, and you develop certain like impressions, ideas, and you read something and it's a very small point in the purport, but you see it totally confirms what you're talking about. So different people become absorbed, you know, in different pastimes and different parts of the Bhagavatam. It becomes natural for them. And it may not even be eternally. I mean, you get absorbed in one thing and it takes you to a certain level of development, purification. And like Gopal Kumar, he was going higher and higher. You know? And so, you know, discussing, appreciating, and actually entering into the actual situation, what was actually happening. So here, I think that the main thing here, super thing here, of course, is, I think, is that Yudhisthira was just, you know, overwhelmed with lamentation. It says like a common person. You know, and he was like thinking about his own position, you know, so much about the future and everything else like that. So in that way, that creates the question then about him being also being a devotee and only caring about what Krishna wanted. And then later on, it also mentions the point too, the same way, that Krishna wanted, you know, Bhishmadev to get all the credit for instructing Yudhisthira. He wanted Yudhisthira to act, play the example, you know, so that the common people could get the instructions about how to deal with the situation. So the natural assumption would be that, you know, Yudhisthira is under the influence of Yoga Maya, you know. And so we may expect that too in our own lives, to be so many times to be in situations where we know that Krishna is using us for some purpose like that, even in ISKCON. That sometimes Krishna is letting people, you know, do bad things because he wants them to do bad things so they'll see the reaction. And that sometimes we feel, okay, this Krishna's playing some game here, and in the end we'll see, yeah, some devotees, they had to go through some doing something bad to see the reaction, to learn, and they were ready for it. You know, one little lesson, okay, they didn't have to leave ISKCON. it's kind of a thing again and again, we so many times, is that people should be kicked out of ISKCON because it's so pure. But Prabhupada's tendency, I hear it again and again, was to be more like, you know, be merciful and let people stay in here even though they're creating some disturbances. And we more superior people should be, you know, able to avoid this and stay within society and be happy and appreciating that this is a preaching movement. You know, so there will always be kind of problems here and stuff like that being created by Krishna so that, you know, people can learn, you know. Okay, so thank you all very much for this opportunity. And again, we're in Mexico now, my goodness. Today we had our meeting with our study partners for Bhakti Bhai Baba, Istagosti, with all the devotees here. Now I have this class. And at 3 o'clock we have to meet with a dentist about one of our disciples with a Jambavati, her jaws are falling off. And she's distributing books for 35 years, but now there's no real money for her to take care of her health, and her jaws are falling apart. So the dentist is trying to help us. And then in the evening, there's a whole evening program, meet with devotees before the evening program, and then initiation is tonight. So it's just like the battle of Kurukshetra here. So it's very, very nice to have your sane association in the peaceful land of Hawaii.
Thank you very much, Maharaj.
Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Maharaj. Hare Boho. Tene mucho de retiro.
Hare Krishna.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, Krishna.
Bye, Bill.
Bye, Keith.